back together again, you and I, chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, August 21st, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I open the show with news of a growing threat from some state residents who say they may not pay their electric bills as a form of protest. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar looked at the ongoing electric bill outrage, as well as a member of the Connecticut delegation making news at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And former White House domestic policy advisor Jim Pinkerton joined the show to talk about the economic issues in the 2024 White House race. So did you ever say to yourself, did you ever look at a bill or anything you got in the mail that required your payment? And did you ever say, now I'm not talking about putting off a payment for a couple of weeks or saying, hey, this is my first priority bill to pay this month. I'll wait till this second bill is almost overdue and then I'll pay it. Because we all move around money, right? I have a friend of mine who says, hey, I'm going to spin the wheel to see who's not getting paid this month. Now, you know, we carry balances on our accounts. And every so often, if we come into extra money, we say, okay, let me get all caught up on the electric bill. Let me get all caught up on the, you know, the cable bill, the internet bill, my subscription to, my subscription to whatever streaming service or services I may be. And occasionally, I may be in the middle of it. Occasionally, there's that one or two or three times a year, right, where we can sit back and go, whew, I am all caught up here, which is good. Now, I'm not telling you not to pay your Eversource bill. I'm not doing that. Understand, repeat. Did you hear what I said? I'm not telling you not to pay your Eversource bill or your UI bill. But I saw a story today, and I found it interesting because I have always kind of wondered what would happen. Not if one, two, or three, or 10, or 20 people decided this. But what if en masse, as they say, in size, in a major size, what would happen if a bunch of people said, screw this, blank this, I'm not paying this, right? Well, apparently, and we've talked about our petition at change.org to try and get the General Assembly to revisit whatever they can revisit. Some things maybe are possible, some things maybe aren't. Maybe you look at PIRA. So we've talked about that change.org petition that was started regarding the public benefits charge on the bills. So we've talked about that, but no way, shape, or form. And this story in the Hartford Courant by Don Stegum does, thankfully, properly cite talk radio and a station like this one, stations in New Haven and Hartford and all around the state out east, too, with fielding the anger of people. But apparently there are now groups of people, and again, let me say this over and over again, I do not endorse this, but this is how upset people are. Some customers, says here in Don Stakem's story in the Hartford Courant, some Eversource customers are so upset they're threatening to not pay either their entire bill or the public benefits charge on their bill. Now, again, that's something I would never do because you have your credit history to worry about. You have your scenario of what is fair and what is not. I get that. But Don Stakem's story here in the Courant cites there's a couple of Facebook sites. One site calls Ban Public Benefits Charge Eversource and UI. And there's a quote there. It says, quote, stop paying your public benefit charge. Everyone needs to wake up and stop being scammed by Eversource. Now, it's not really a scam. You've got to understand that. And because people are emotional with this, there's stuff going on. Like, for instance, there's a picture of Ned Lamont on social media. I've seen this pop up on Facebook a few times. And he's got a white T-shirt on and somebody is waving. He's waving, rather, in a crowd of a bunch of people. And the inference is the governor is wearing an Eversource t-shirt. He's not. That's obviously a scammed, photoshopped t-shirt. It's not real. And that should not be done. And referring to the public benefits charge for Eversource and UI, well, it's not really a scam. Because the legislators that you may have voted for or voted against, and PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, you may not like it. But this is what happens when you don't pay attention. You understand what I'm saying here? You're mad and you're upset here because you didn't pay attention. And you did not demand of your lawmakers, probably because a lot of you voted blindly for them. We weren't afforded or given an upfront clear delineation of what was going on. There's another Facebook site here. I think this is, this is on Facebook. Quote, it's time we did something. If your account is in good standing, don't pay the 21% public benefits charge. Now, both these groups have a few thousand members. I get it. I understand that. But that's not going to change things necessarily. What it might do, and I understand you're upset, and this is my point. You have people now so upset, so ticked off, that they're doing something that I had always wondered, sitting at home looking at my own bills, saying, hey, what if people en masse just didn't pay their bills? Now, of course, the change.org petition that I have gotten my whatever influence I have here, thank you, I've gotten behind, is a legitimate way to at least ask that things be reconsidered here. We're looking at it right now. It's approaching 58,000 signatures, over 1,000 people signing on today. I don't have a problem with that. And how you want to handle your own finances is your business. But I don't think, A, it's not smart, but B, it shows just how upset people are when you have at least a few thousand people on a couple of Facebook sites here. One is Ban, Public Benefits Charge, Eversource, and UI, and the other is Boycott, Eversource's Public Benefits Charge. That's how upset people are with this. Now, do they have a right to be upset? Yeah, they do. I mean, that's the American way. But again, this is what happens when A, you don't pay attention, B, you blindly vote for someone who you wouldn't think would vote for this, you know, and or C, the General Assembly does things that, while somewhat transparent, really aren't. Deb Ledoit of Coventry, a member of the Ban the Public Benefits Charge group, says here, we'll be taxed twice for this with our home bills and then our four fire department buildings and police department for town taxes. So this is the way people are interpreting this. And of course, the Hartford Current writes, AM talk radio shows have been flooded with callers denouncing state government and Eversource alike for fast rising bills, and a small group of ratepayers, as we mentioned, has begun calling for a protest rally on September 12th at the state capitol. You want to do that? Fine. You know, make your voice heard. Make your voice heard. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Would I ever not pay my bill? No. No, but that's just me. Is that something you've ever thought about? Honestly. Now, I'm not recommending you do it. In fact, please don't not pay your bill if you have the money. Now, if you don't have the money, that's a different story. That's a decision you have to make. Maybe you talk with somebody there on a payment plan. I was on that years and years and years ago for a few months when times were a little tough. They're good now. But having said that, though, this is an illustration of just how upset people are, that they are at, that there are at least a few thousand people on a couple of social media sites that are saying, hey, I'm so upset I may not pay this. Now, I can understand you're being upset at the dollar figure here, but there's a further issue that we have to talk about with this. We'll do that momentarily. Dorothy starts us off today. Dorothy, how are you?
I need you to educate me.
Yeah.
Was it the legislators who are unfortunately made the wrong decision to, you know, tack on this extra charge on our bill?
I am not going to single out anybody or any party, Dorothy,
only because
there were a couple of different votes here. There was a decision by Pura. There was a preview. No, just because people need to know, too, Dorothy. That's a good question.
Exactly. I want to know the truth. I don't have I want to live where you live, though. Don't you have your own water?
Yes. No, our own.
My daughter has that in Hingham, Massachusetts.
We have our own.
Mom, it works fantastic.
Well, we have our own power company. Wallingford's about one of eight municipalities that never sold to.
Well, I want to live where you live.
Well, come on into town. Keep my taxes down.
Okay. But guess what, Paul?
Yeah.
This was going to be my solution.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay my whole bill.
No, of course you do.
Just say it was 20 extra dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be nice if all the people up in Hartford who are like Mr. Lamont, who I totally respect, but all the billionaires, all the millionaires, maybe they would like to chip in now that they realize how bad it is for the average person. Maybe they'll next time around, just until we get this straightened out, maybe they should all chip in under their generosity. And, you know, not maybe so much for me, because my bill is probably going to be small. I have a small condo.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are moms and dads that are worried about buying shoes for their kids.
Yeah.
And they're going off to school. Come on, guys. You guys up in Hartford, the majority of you have a lot of money.
And next
time around, think about the poor guy who's trying to buy shoes for his kid now.
And again, Dorothy, thank you. I appreciate it. Listen, I'm not saying I could have done something better, but let's look at this now. In the General Assembly in Pura, they should say, hey, people are pretty mad at this. Now, I know they say, well, part of it's the hot summer we had. Okay. Part of it is that we're paying for people who are not shut off during COVID. Okay. Part of it is there was a difference in the General Assembly between parties of paying all this money that was due to Eversource and UI over 1 year or 3 years or 5 years. Listen, there's a lot of culpability to go around here. But now that everybody's mad, my question is this. What is going to be done? Now, maybe it's nothing earth-shattering. That's not, again, people of much higher pay grades get paid to handle this. My point is, are they listening to people and are they asking themselves, geez, what can we do here? Versus saying, well, you know, actually, this was a vote of this guy. There are thousands of people in the state now that don't care. It doesn't mean they're right, it doesn't mean they're wrong, but they're upset and they want at least something to be done or revisited. Our usual midweek check-in right about this time, quarter after five every Wednesday. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar is with us with a cornucopia of stuff. Mr. Haar, good afternoon, sir, and how are you?
Happy Wednesday.
Beautiful day out here. Yeah, it is. It is, absolutely, after that disaster over the weekend. Dan, and you know this stuff. You cover this stuff as good as anyone else because you know the ins and outs of this. Are you surprised or not that this whole thing with the electric rates and the increases and the public benefits and Pura, are you surprised that this is still that big of a story or not?
Well, it's not. The answer is I have been surprised, but it's no longer going to be as big a story because we've had the latter half of the summer has been actually kind of cooler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start to see bills not only going down from where they were in the July shock, but going down from where they were a year ago at this time of year, because we've had a cooler summer than typical when you go from the end of July on. That is basically August. So the August bills are going to be good. So am I surprised? I'm surprised at how difficult it is for people to understand that the problem is two different things and to keep them separate,
mm-hmm.
right? And in other words, yes, we're paying for public benefits, which public benefits consist of two different things. One of them is the Millstone contract, which we won't go into how it happens.
Yeah.
But it's not about Eversource and UI. It's about the state imposing a contract on Eversource and UI, which costs us, the ratepayers, money. And so that's one. And the other is the anti-poverty program and the bills not getting paid, which are two separate programs themselves. People's inability to keep all of this stuff separate is a little surprising and a little not. I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that.
So do you think, Dan, and I know the governor says, well, he'd be open to a special session. All the Republicans say that. Some Democrats say that. But would it be within their best interest, maybe? And I said this earlier today. You're not going to solve this in a few weeks or a few months. But should they at least maybe get together and say, okay, we hear you. Here's how we got there. Maybe there are ways to, in the future, do this better. You think it would behoove the General Assembly to say, hey, we know you're angry. Let's explain what's really going on here. Because frankly, Dan, and I said this earlier, and I've been saying it about this, it's not to denigrate people, but they generally don't pay attention to this stuff. You know what I mean?
Special session is just political silliness.
Yeah.
There's no need for a special session. Special session isn't going to accomplish anything. I can tell you right now, in about a minute or less, the three things that are being discussed that might come up in a special session.
Sure.
Number one is let's take some money that the state has in surplus and spend it on some of these public benefits,
mm-hmm.
specifically the public benefits to pay bills and to work on the there's a new program. It's a $100 million program for Eversource alone, plus more for UI that pays 10 or 50% of people's rates. Right. That program was overwhelmingly passed by the legislature in 2021.
Yeah.
We don't need a special session to undo a program that passed overwhelmingly. It's just that it hit at exactly the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece of a potential special session is let's stop spending so much money on alternative energy. That's a fine debate to have, not in a special session.
OK.
Right. And the other piece is let's restructure some of these contracts. Again, these are not special session items.
Yeah.
We're not in an emergency. We're in a problem that occurred because a heat wave hit at exactly the time as a periodic rate increase, not periodic, but a policy based rate increase. Special session would be pure politics.
Yeah, I agree. And if we're going to do this right or straighten these things out, you're right. You take a measured approach and you do it in a timely but relaxed fashion and see what you can change here. A couple of things you pointed out. One thing I kind of saw but I didn't get into was there's a delegate with a Connecticut delegation at the DNC in Chicago out of West Hartford that drew a little attention. What's going on with that?
I just got off the phone with him.
Really?
Etham Poré
is
an Egyptian political exile who was prosecuted and persecuted in Egypt for political activism.
Mm-hmm.
He was jailed, and he escaped from Egypt, and he became a political activist here, Democratic Party loyalist, but pretty, further to the left.
Okay.
And he was with a group of three delegates, one from Florida, one from Michigan, and himself from Connecticut. These are delegates to the convention. These are not, random protesters. This is not a guy who got on a bus and went to Chicago. This is a delegate. This is, right? He's a Democratic Party
delegate.
Sure,
yeah. Not easy. Yeah, go ahead.
No. One of the 74. And he unfurled a banner on Monday during the Biden speech that said, stop arming Israel in black, green, and red letters. And that banner was immediately taken down. He was not arrested. They were just taken down. And so he also, separate from that, was one of 52 delegates nationwide and the first to be declared who voted present instead of yes for Kamala Harris and Walz to be the nominees. So that's a statement. And he made that statement. However, he does intend to vote for Kamala Harris. Many delegates, including some from Connecticut, now want nothing to do with him and are distancing themselves. There's a debate here.
Mm-hmm.
One side of the debate says, if you're going to be a delegate and we have a candidate, let's show some unity like the vast majority, because it's not like this is 1980 when you had the Kennedy delegates and the Carter delegates.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This is not that. Let's show some unity and let's support the candidate. And he was, of course, able to not vote yes because he was freed up because it's not Biden. Like, he would have been obligated to vote for Biden. He would have done that and he would have happily done it. But he didn't. And that's where we are. One side says, great, this is a guy exercising his political rights as a delegate. The other side says, are you nuts? We're in a battle for our political future here. Let's show some unity.
Yeah.
And he's being ostracized by some, and others are saying, yes, we understand what you're doing. He has no intention of voting for anyone but Kamala Harris.
Well, yeah, and good for him. Listen, Dan, I don't care whether it's Republican, Democrats, communists, fascists, whatever. To me, Dan, when you're bullied, I don't care who does it, into saying, well, hey, you got to keep your mouth shut here. I mean, where does that come from? Well, what happened, Dan Hart, to the days when conventions openly embraced a fiery debate with the smoke-filled rooms and all that? I mean, we don't have that anymore, but what's wrong with little dissension? I think that's good.
What happened was Chicago 68, where it got out of hand, and then the party clamped down in 72 and said, we're going to have boring TV events.
Infomercials. That's all they are.
So, but he is a delegate. He is a Biden. I'm sorry. He's a Kamala Harris supporter in full measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does consider himself a supporter, but he wanted to make a statement. And his statement is about arming Israel.
And finally, Dan Har, Bridgeport is not the only Fairfield County municipality with some interesting soap opera politics here. We're getting a lot of entertainment out of the city of Stamford, are we not?
Yeah, the latest in Stamford this week is that even though our friend that we spoke about last week, who I never met, Annabelle Figueroa, was ousted from everything in the world, the Democrats on the Board of Representatives are not happy with Mr. Jeff Curtis, the president of the Board of Representatives, a Democrat, because he didn't, in their view, rebuke her fast enough, hard enough, or publicly enough, and because he responded to their rebuke of them, of her, by saying show some humanity instead of optics, because they knew or should have known that she was going to resign anyway. Why did you put her through this? So now they're saying, we want your head. And I think that's a little much. And so I think it'll calm down. But all of it, remember, stems from the division between the reformers in Stamford that wanted the charter revisions that took power away from developers, and the mayor's side, Mayor Caroline Simmons. And she has now officially twice won on two straight election days and pretty much done a good job of putting down, I won't say a political insurrection. It was far from an insurrection, but she has vanquished her opponents.
Absolutely. Dan Har, Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor. As always, Dan, good to get the breakdown on that stuff. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Enjoy the speeches.
Thank you. Yes, Dan, I will. Thank you. I guess Dan didn't get to go to the convention. We were talking about that. Like, if you folks at Hearst, like, what happened? You didn't send Dan Har out there? Come on, money well spent. Joining us right now, a gentleman who worked in the domestic policy office at the White House under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush in their 1980, 84, 88, and 92 campaigns. He worked for the Mike Huckabee campaign in 2008. He was a one-time contributor to the Fox News Channel. You have seen his columns and writings in Newsday, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Financial Times, the LA Times, USA Today. So again, continuing my tradition of having people on who have much better resumes than me and business cards, Jim Pinkerton is the guest. Hey, Jim, good afternoon. It's Paul in Connecticut. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. You have a piece here in the Daily Caller. Harris's price gouging plan could be a campaign stunt or a slide toward Venezuelan-style socialism. Jim, I don't know about you. I'm hoping for the stunt part of this, but I'm sure, Jim, you've seen your share of campaign stunts over your lifetime. But, yeah, let's go into this. And, Jim, you knew it was weird, or maybe not, when a bunch of center or left-leaning publications kind of roll their eyes at this. But what do you make of this?
Well, it is strange that, you know, Kamala Harris is on a good streak, right? I mean, she's got the Democratic Party behind her. She's, you know, and she had a nice having a nice convention. Mm-hmm. And then, weirdly, she chose to break her momentum from, you know, first black woman triumphing to this sort of left-wing Bernie Sanders stuff. And it was a mistake, clearly. I mean, the prediction markets had her tumbling in the wake of that. It was just an odd thing for her to do. So as I wrote in the Daily Caller, you know, the best that can be said about this price gouging, price controlling plan is that it's a stunt. It was a bad stunt. They made a mistake, but we can hope that, you know, if she does win, you know, this year, the Congress will just say, well, that's pretty stupid. We're not going to do that. The fear, of course, is that, you know, presidents have a lot of power sort of unilaterally. I mean, you know, even without Congress, mm-hmm. presidents have been, you know, Barack Obama comes to mind on DACA, have been able to say, well, you know, I have executive authority to do this and that, and I'm going to make the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission and, you know, the Agriculture Department and whoever get in the middle of all this. And so you get a kind of slog where the president is determined to do, quote, do something about price fixing, quote, unquote. And if he's in a war with Congress, and that was just, that's one of those constitutional crises that we have every, you know, 10 or 20 years in our history. And at that point, you know, the people who believe in freedom and free markets have, you know, got to get to the metaphorical barricades.
Yeah. So, Jim, you to reverse, go back a little what you said here. Now, you worked on a number of campaigns and you said it was a bad idea. But somebody must have thought, hey, Madam Vice President, let's do this. I mean, who on the inside there? I'm not talking about specific people, but obviously somebody had to convince her that that was a good idea. Right. I would think.
Well, exactly. Look, I quote in the article, a fellow named Sean McElwee, who's in New York, who just says, you know, do you have any idea how many, you know, and this is him talking in Politico in 2022, do you have any ideas how many socialists and crypto communists there are inside the Biden White House? And they came in through Bernie Sanders. He didn't name them, but, you know, Harris. Look, it all falls into place, right? I mean, Harris was the most left-wing senator, you know, mm-hmm. even to the left of Sanders and the great Elizabeth Warren. And she co-sponsored the same pretty much bill with Warren in 2020 when she was still in the Senate. So it's not just that she's got left-wing staff. It's every reason to believe, you know, she was born in Oakland, raised in Berkeley, lived in Canada, went to school in Washington, D.C., went to graduate school in San Francisco. You know, she's never really been in a place where, you know, there's anything other than progressives and left-wingers in charge. And so I think a big chunk of her just said, well, that's sort of just what people are. They're just sort of left-wing. And of course, they're for price. It's not just price controls now. It's since the article ran, now we've got, you know, higher taxes on capital gains mm-hmm. and higher corporate taxes. I mean, she's really, you know, in for the whole enchilada on this. And I think it's going to be a pretty substantial, you know, campaign issue. If Donald Trump, you know, gets focused on this and says, listen, do you want Venezuela? And if the answer is no, then you can't vote for Harris.
Jim Pinkerton is the guest. By the way, he's a senior fellow at the Center for American Prosperity. So, Jim, and I see what you mean by the disconnect here. She's basically a West Coast, East Coast person. And when Joe Biden stepped aside, we all knew he had to. I talked about it on the show here for weeks that, listen, for the sake of the country, you can't be running for re-election at 82 like that. But it does now pose a problem, does it not, for Kamala Harris? Because, you know, say what you will about Joe Biden, he kind of still had that union hall, lunch pail, rust belt kind of approval, you know, a connection that Joe Biden did. She doesn't have that. Now, is Tim Walz going to be able to replicate that or not?
Well, I don't think she's interested in it. I think she's making the calculation in her campaign that, you know, she can win with, as you suggested, the East Coast and the West Coast and a few blue dots, you know, in between, like Illinois and so on. And, you know, you do the math and you probably can, you know, win a narrow victory with just sort of the coast and, you know, maybe Minnesota and so on. So it's a narrow strategy. It's certainly not an outreach strategy. You know, it, mm-hmm. however, you know, and one of the ongoing debates, as it were, within sort of the political field is the value of, you know, persuasion versus mobilization. And,
yeah.
you know, and you, do you try and persuade people to vote your way, or do you simply get every last voter on your side out? You know, and I think the trend, frankly, in both parties has been more towards mobilization. Just make sure that 100% of your people, or 102%
yeah.
of your people vote, and you win. And that's, you know, and it's sort of, in some ways, more fun because you only get to say what you want to say. You don't have to pretend you're thinking anything else.
And to that end, Jim Pinkerton, King, and I've asked some friends of mine in the media and who've been in politics, can she go, can the vice president go the entire campaign without holding a news conference? What do you think?
I think the media would say, aren't you clever?
Really? So,
Look, they will, look, it's, they want her to win. They look, if they think Trump is some combination of the Antichrist and Hitler, you know, and therefore they will make noises every now and then. They'll say, you know, it's too bad she hasn't had a press conference. They'll
yeah.
say that every so often. But they're just not going to pound her on it because they, I think the Paris campaign has persuaded them, or they persuaded themselves,
mm-hmm.
that she's actually got a smart strategy. I mean, you know, you think back to the, you know, the interview that, you know, and give Lester Holt of NBC News.
Oh, my God, what a disaster. Oh.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. And Lester wasn't mean to her.
No.
He just sort of
All he did, Jim, was simply point out, Madam Vice President, you haven't been to the border. And she starts arguing with him, Jim, and my jaw hits the floor. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Exactly. So, yeah, Lester says just a give him credit, though, a quick statement. You have not been to the border. And she starts cackling and talking about Europe. And look, as Europe, if you're the campaign consultant in the Harris, you know, operation, you say, well, look, that's about the worst thing ever, right?
Yeah.
So we have to avoid that. And if you say that, well, then all of a sudden, maybe they'll, you know, they'll do an interview with, you know that, like the Tim Walz thing. Tim Walz and she sort of interviewed each other for a little bit there. Maybe that's what they'll say, that's close enough. And I expect most of the media will buy it.
Yeah. Finally, Jim Pinkerton, one of your former bosses was a guy named Ronald Reagan. In fact, there's a movie coming out about him in a few weeks. What do you think Mr. Reagan would say if you were sitting in an office or in a setting with him again and he looked this campaign? What do you think he would say?
Well, I think he would say, he'd quote, I know he says he did it in life. He said, he would quote Lincoln, you conquer your enemies by making them your friends.
Mm.
And that's the persuasion model. Reagan, you know, look, you get to 59% as Reagan did in 1984 with persuasion. You say, look, I know you voted for Carter in 1980, but now I want you to vote for me, and here's why. And it's a more attractive civic model of life to simply say, you know, I hear you loud. And Reagan, of course, had the advantage of being a former Democrat. So he was, you know, you go back and look at his speeches.
Yeah.
He's quoting Franklin Roosevelt and John Kennedy and Harry Truman all the time.
Mm.
And it's a good tactic. Say, like, listen, I'm not saying that you were wrong to support those guys. I mean, and, you know, Reagan had a reception for the centennial of Franklin Roosevelt's birth
yeah.
back in 1982.
Remember that.
And it was, you had Tip O'Neill and Jennings Randolph, who I think was the only member of Congress back then who had actually served during the Roosevelt administration. And he chatted him up and talked him up and said, you know, he didn't concede any points to Roosevelt on, you know, higher taxes or anything. He just said he was a great guy and made people feel good and helped us win World War II. And, you know, that's how you make Reagan Democrats. And it actually is pretty good advice for anybody running now, if you ask me.
Yeah, and maybe finally, Jim, you crank out a couple of commercials like his Morning in America commercials, which were, and I have young people getting into politics, and I pull up a few commercials, and one of them I say, watch this. And you know the spot I'm talking about, that Morning in America ad. And you're right, it was just an amazing 60 seconds of positivity. It didn't slander anybody. It wasn't brutal. That was just a masterful ad.
It was, and the other one that comes to mind from the same campaign, was the bear in the woods at.
Yeah.
The morning, I mean, this is all on YouTube, so your listeners can find one easily enough. The Morning in America brings tears to your eyes, even after you've seen it, as I have, you know, 1,000 times. The bear in the woods at makes you think, and that's also kind of fun, and says maybe we just got to worry about the Soviets a little bit more than, you know, than Teddy Kennedy wants us to.
Yeah.
And so he was, Reagan was perfect. Reagan, you know, look, some people say today, Reagan's a nice guy, he's some kind of rhino or something.
Yeah.
He was not. He was
rhino.
As hardcore as anybody. Yet he just had sort of a gentlemanly quality to him that enabled him, notably, to carry Connecticut twice in 1884.
Amazing. Jim Pinkerton, Jim, senior fellow at the Center for American Prosperity. Jim, thank you. I really enjoyed this, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Jim Pinkerton, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Jim Pinkerton, senior fellow, Center for American Prosperity, was a domestic policy advisor under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush.